is dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
And this is Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel. I'm Phil Kogan. Is that in the background there, Mae? Are you saying something?
Yeah, I'm mumbling.
You're mumbling.
I'm trying to remember my name.
Dialogue Assassination is a program that examines the political implications of political assassinations and the relationship of those assassinations to everyday events in the news, which go sometimes unnoticed or unconnected, right, Mae?
That's right. They go unnoticed and unconnected. And speaking of that, I'm going to read the news coverage of a very important trial that's going on in our area right now and show you how the local news carries it, and then tell you that the outlying areas like the San Jose Mercury and the San Francisco Chronicle haven't touched this case at all yet. And I'm going to try to calm down, Phil. I've been very upset. I'm going to talk about the trial of Hugo Pinnell that is taking place this week and the past week in Monterey County in California. And I'm going to give you the background, Hugo Pinnell. I did about 20 minutes of our show last week about Hugo. This week I attended the trials myself, and I'm going to let Hugo speak for himself. I'm going to read you some of the notes that I took that he said on the stand and go into the background of this particular man. The reason I'm discussing him is that my research goes into political assassinations, and going along with the word assassination is the word conspiracy. They're equal because there were conspiracies that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Oda family, and the Sharon Tate massacre, the LaBiancas, in Los Angeles. Lee Harvey Oswald, James Ray, Sirhan Sirhan, Charles Manson, John Frazier, and Hugo Pinnell did not kill the persons that they were on trial for killing. They are innocent, and they are victims of a conspiracy for purposes that we go into many times on the various figures. I place now Hugo Pinnell in the category of a political conspiracy. I've heard him tell on the stand for just 2 days why there is a conspiracy to get him and to hurt him and eventually to kill him and to set him up as an example for all the black inmates in the California penal system. Hugo Pinnell's case is identical to the prosecution of James Ray or Sirhan or Manson or Frazier. I'm going to go into the position, not of all those cases. I'm going to talk about his judge, the prosecution, the public defender. In this case, the evidence is destroyed or missing that would help prove his innocence. He can't choose his own lawyer. Ruby could not use Mr. Howard for a lawyer. He was forced to have Belli and Joe Tannehill. Oswald had no lawyer. He was killed. Sirhan could not use Godfrey Isaac. Now he has to stick with McKissick, and he had Grant Cooper. James Ray had Mr. Hines representing him till the hour of the trial, saying that it was a conspiracy. 24 hours before going to court, he got Percy Freeman put onto the foreman put onto the case. Hugo Pinnell does not have a lawyer. He's in court today. He does not even have a lawyer representing him. His life is on the line. Identical to the major political assassinations, the witnesses that would prove his innocence are not allowed to be called by the public defender. He's been accused by the defense as being part of the conspiracy. I accused the man myself. He called KLRB, the public defender's office called here. The position I'm taking on Hugo Pinnell and on all these assassinations has nothing to do with the news department or the policy of KLRB. I am a researcher. I back up my work with documentation. I stand alone. They do not send me there to cover the story at all. I went of my own free will because it is a conspiratorial case that fits in with the entire state of California. The witnesses that would defend and prove the innocence of Hugo Pinnell have been killed, missing, threatened to be killed. They're brutalized. Some are in the strip cells now and have been there for 9 days. They're told they'll get a lifetime in jail. They're offered parole to turn on him. We'll go into the planted evidence, envelopes with Prince of Pinel, just like in the major political assassinations, evidence withheld, evidence missing, witnesses missing.
Now, those are kind of some heavy charges to make.
Yes. I'll go into them as time allows, one by one, and show you just what I mean in those charges. This last Wednesday night, I sent a night letter. It was dated April 19th, and it was sent to the following people: President Richard Nixon, the White House; Robert Kastenmeier, Subcommittee Number 3, Committee of the Judiciary, House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. Robert Kastenmeier was in California in October for a congressional investigation with members of Congress of the California penal system, at which time Mr. Pecunier, who's in charge of Department of Corrections, appeared and left. He didn't hear any of the testimony earlier or after he was there, and I'm going to read you a letter that Robert Kastenmeier wrote to Pecunier, that he was worried that Mr. Hugo Pinel was going to be killed in the California penal system. I'm going to read that on the air, because when he got back to Washington, he was afraid that Pinel would be killed in the custody of our system. And the man that he wrote it to, Mr. Pecunier, sat and witnessed Pinel chained to a chair, beaten up, his head broken open and badgered, in the presence of the Attorney General of California and the head of the Corrections Department.
When did that take place?
Yesterday. It happened up at San Quentin, and I'll read you what happened there. But I sent these telegrams, I'm reading the names, to Robert Kastenmeier, who has sent a letter, and I'll read a copy of that on this program, worried about the life of Hugo Pinel. I sent the same telegram to Representative Conyers from Michigan, the House of Representatives; Alan Cerotti in the Assembly in California, who attended those congressional hearings from early morning to late at night, never leaving and taking in what was said; Frank Murphy, Assemblyman of California, who is now working for the Ombudsman Bill in the state of California so that he knows what's happening down here; Robert Dellums, House of Representatives, Washington; Don Edwards, House of Representatives, Washington; Shirley Chisholm, House of Representatives; Bella Obzug, House of Representatives; Senator Fred Harris, Washington, D.C.; Jonathan Bingham, House of Representatives in Washington, D.C.; and John Tunney, Senator from Washington, D.C. I will send a letter to every member of Congress to the effect of what is in this telegram, but because I don't have that much money, and it was a lengthy telegram, I'm going to read. This went out last night, including the White House. It read as follows: Defendant Hugo Pinel, Court of Judge Machado, Salinas, California, is being denied all legal and human rights. California Department of Corrections, Attorney General Evel Younger, must be thoroughly, immediately investigated by Congress. Conspiracy of judge, public defender, California justice system, personified in this case. I'll take off the letter for 1 minute. The Congress knows that these men that I talk about are involved in the Manson and the Frazier and the Sirhan case. But this is an easy case because it's only going 2 weeks and it isn't complicated. And everything I've said about those gentlemen is personified in this particular case. It's easy to get the picture here. The wire goes on. Pinel and Raymond Marquez, inmates at Solanet, are in immediate danger of death or damage for life. They are brutalized daily. Pinel's trial, a mockery of justice. Pinel denied proof of innocence. Key evidence missing. Defense witnesses not allowed. Strip cells, brutalization, bribery, death threats to inmates who would testify. Please act. Transcript of this trial will document these charges. Urgent. Signed, May Brussel. Now, I stand by that the transcript of just what I saw will document everything that I've said on this show about the other political assassinations and what I charged in this letter. So the charges I said that are heavy, Phil, all you have to do is get the transcript of this particular trial. Now, I want to, I was going to read a poem called The Hangman. I think I'll go right to the Pinel case, and if we have time when it's over, I'm going to read it to you. I read it at the Human Rights Day out at the college this year. It's written by a man who once did serve time in prison. And it's the story of people sitting by and doing nothing and watching the other person being taken away until you're the last one left, and then you realize that you were intended to be part of the group, that you could tolerate violence and killing done to another person as long as it didn't affect your life. But then when it came your turn, you couldn't take it, and you're left alone, and you still meet the same fate. And the reason I want to read this, if we have time, is that yesterday when Mr. Pinnell was chained around the neck and shoulders, and his arms handcuffed and his legs a few inches apart with chains, and he's knocked down along with Raymond Marquez, another man, in the courtroom, and 40 sheriffs from Monterey County are over these men, and they're screaming and yelling, and we didn't know if they were dead or alive, and they're being badgered in front of the people in the court, and Hugo Pinnell's mother screaming and crying, and no one can see these men. We saw the hair of Marquez pulled out by a handful and brutalized right in front of us, and a huge overfill of armed men with these two chained men lying on the ground screaming, and they're standing over them, and it was a terrifying experience. And Hugo's mother is crying to the people. They made us leave the court. I didn't want to leave. I said, if you're going to kill him, I want to see you kill him. Right here, they've been threatening it ever since he's been in the California Department of Corrections.
Who's been threatening it?
The guards and everybody. The day before, Tuesday, Pinnell could hardly testify. He was in such pain, and the nerves of his teeth are exposed raw. He could hardly talk, and he passed out. While we were having lunch, he was on the floor, passed out. When he wakes up, they say, die, dog, die. The guards say, you'll never make it out alive. I'll give you the names of the guards. We talked about this last week. They threaten him every minute, and I'm going to use his words so that you'll understand how the thing comes across. And his mother is yelling, wait till it's your turn, wait till it's your turn, she's saying to the people out in the foyer that are milling around. Just, you don't know whether to vomit or cry, and you're absolutely in a state of shock. No one can talk to anybody else. And she's screaming, wait till it's your turn someday. And I kept thinking of the hangman. And I sat next to her, and I was glad that my life is dedicated to believing that these things happen and being able, I don't want to see them, but to be spending 9 years talking about this system and trying to tell you people out there what's happening. And it's happening just a few miles from your home in Salinas. I talk about fascism or Goering or Goebbels last week, or the Hitler setup that's in our state, and it's happening right out in your backyard, and it's hard to visualize. Three people who I met through this radio show who begin reading books on the political assassinations and collecting tapes of all the shows went out to the trial yesterday. And I was going to bring them in, Phil, this morning, but they're out there again today. And these two of the boys just were discharged from Fort Ord, and one lives in town, has worked here. And they were supposed to come over last night, and one of them was sick, had a headache. And they were so upset. These are establishment boys somewhat who just want to learn about the system. They've been listening to Dialogue Assassination for months now and saw this trial, and it was a flash of everything I said in every book they've read. The Garrison book, The Heritage of Stone, or all the books on the assassination that I've talked about was exemplified in a session out there in court.
Oh, let's get into that.
Okay. Now, to compare it to the other murders, I brought in a book that I have talked about on other shows that came out just recently by John Siegenthaler called A Search for Justice. Three writers from Tennessee, newspaper men, carried the trial of James Ray, Clay Shaw, and Sirhan Sirhan, and individually wrote a book on these particular trials and came to the conclusion that the American system of justice in these major criminal trials just doesn't work at all, and that if the American system of justice is like this at the lower courts, it will completely fall apart into chaos. There's no hope for the system as it exists. So to talk about it in generalities is one thing. To get onto the trial is another. Their book was dedicated to the memory of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy, who sought justice and died in the pursuit of it. My visiting with at the trial of Hugo Pinnell, and I'll take this to a national level as quickly as I can because it's been so hushed up and he's been so brutalized, is in memory of those that search for justice too, and he has to go among them. A few quotations from this book that are pertinent to the Pinnell trial. These men covered the three trials, and I'm going to read you a few sentences I marked that pertain to Hugo Pinnell because he is in the category of the political assassins they're talking about. The authors of this book said, the possible dishonesty of the judges and attorneys never came up during the trial of Shaw, Ray, or Sirhan. He said there was a feeling on the part of all three reporters in those major cases that the question of judicial competence was a problem. Now, I'm saying these men are writing about the trials of Ray, Sirhan, and Clay Shaw. I'm telling you that they're identical to Hugo Pinnell. The judge, the book goes on to say, and to a greater degree, the prosecutor, have partial control of the destiny of the defendants. And it's obvious that the political process must occasionally tempt those who preside and those who prosecute. And it is not healthy to leave a defendant's case, particularly in sensational cases where community emotions may be high, in the hands of a district attorney or a judge, where they have an election coming up or they play politics in the state. The district attorney of Monterey County's name is Mr. Curtis, and you better get to know him. We'll be mentioning him a lot. And I know they're listening to this show today because all of them wondered why I was taking notes. I took 35 pages of notes one day, 29 the other day. They won't let you take a tape recorder in, and the reasons are perfectly obvious. The book goes on to say, a system that has no provision for requiring judges and district attorneys to know what their business about is no system at all, and the federal system of selecting judges calls for an extensive background and investigation by the FBI. But in this other system, this isn't a federal court. It doesn't exist. It says the public has a right to expect that a workable system of justice will provide magistrates and prosecutors who are, at the very least, qualified to perform their duties in court, and this system makes no attempt to meet the public expectation. And there should be a method of investigating when justified censuring or disciplining the prosecutor or the defense lawyers or the judges who, during the course of this trial, engage in actions that undermine justice. And I'm going to take that quotation and I'm going to send that to every member of Congress in a letter because I can't afford them a telegram. And they're going to get a transcript of this trial, and that Congress is going to censure this particular state criminal system as it exists. If they don't want to go into the Manson or the Frazier or the Sirhan case, they can start with this. I'll let them start with this one. And censure the public defender and the prosecutor and the judge. I have witnessed them. And what they said is on record for history. I wrote a play on called The Tiger by the Tail that someday I really, I had a chance to do it on Broadway, and then the man went to Europe to produce a movie on Hemingway, and he has not returned. It's a story of Earl Warren and Jack Ruby, the first act, using their words, and the second act is a polygraph test of Ruby writing his own questions with Henry Wade and District Attorney Alexander down in Dallas. And someday I would like to do a play on Hugo Pinnell, just using the testimony of a two-week trial. The book on the search for justice says the idea that local lawyers or the Bar Association will adequately investigate or properly discipline their judges or district attorneys or their defense lawyers is ludicrous. The local bar members want to get along with their presiding judge and the prosecuting attorney and their fellow lawyers, and they don't want trouble, and they do not want to damage the image of their profession by calling attention to the faults of those who work at the court. Everything here is applicable to the Pinnell trial. The book goes on. The lawyer's theory is simply that if any one of these incidents interfere with the administration of criminal justice, the defendant has a right to appeal. The idea that justice or the public interest or the interest of the defendant is served by appeal is fallacious. Now, I'm stopping that quotation. The judge keeps saying, I want you to say everything so that you won't be able to say later that we didn't let you say it, or you'll have the right to appeal, and you'll have the right to appeal. And the public record will show you, he keeps saying to Pinnell, you'll have the appeal. Pinnell says, I want this case now. They have the witnesses to prove his innocence. He doesn't want an appeal. If he goes back to Soledad, he'll be dead. They told him he'd be dead. He doesn't want an appeal. He wants to get those chains off of his body now. He wants his teeth fixed. He can only use one side of his mouth. His teeth were knocked out, and he was sent to a dentist at Soledad, and he had to have the tooth was completely splintered, and he had to have it fixed, and the dentist got orders from the office, you can't use Novocaine, and they wouldn't let him have anything to kill the pain, and the attendant, the prisoner who attends in the dental room, would not stay and watch. He walked out, and he got a slip, I think it's 115, or a reprimand, because he wouldn't watch. And the dentist took a pair of pliers and pulled his tooth out without anesthetic or dental instrument. When he asked for the dental records for his court trial to show the conspiracy against him, and he has 30 reasons to show why they were trying to break him down, they've told him why. He can't have those at court, and the public defender won't ask for them. But this man...
How's this, the charge about the dentist? Is that documented?
Oh, yes, of course. And he can't even talk. He can't use one side of his mouth. He's got runners. And then...
What's the prison explanation for that?
The prison... I told you last week, and I've said it many times, the California prison system is like Auschwitz. What reason did Himmler have for doing what he did? You have to get the people across this coast from nation to nation... across this nation and to other places to understand what's happening in Monterey County and Salinas in California.
But surely that chart, just the statement about the teeth, must have been answered by somebody.
Well, you know, at the time that
he was brought up, was it not challenged?
Not at all. He has no public defender. Yet, when the court went out of session yesterday, the public defender got up and said he's not taking the case anymore. The jury was out of the room. And Pindell didn't want him as his defender, and the defender said, I'm not taking the case anymore. And then the judge just calls the jury in and doesn't know to this day that Pindell doesn't have a public defender. So that whatever Pindell says isn't challenged or crossed, he's not defended by him, but the jury doesn't know it. They're out of the room when this is decided. So he's sitting there even without a defender. When he talks about his teeth...
Well, he has somebody assigned to the case, right?
No, not yesterday. No one. They took him off the stand.
He was there by himself?
Yeah, and they took him off the... I'll get to the point of what he was saying when he was on the stand, Phil. And they took him off the stand. And I'm going to go into a power blackout that happened in the court so that they could have a huddle with Sacramento. And I'm going to show you what he was saying. And at the time he said it, the lights went out. And I called the electric company in Salinas to see if the city had a blackout. And it was only in that courtroom. At 11:15, we were supposed to go till 12 and take a break till 1:30. And 11:15, that room went black. And all the leniency that Pindell had to tell these stories was over. And when we came back at 1:30, he was no longer allowed to admit in evidence any more proof of a conspiracy against him because he had named Ebel Younger for CUNY of the Department of Corrections and this whole correction system in the state of California. The judge was letting him talk, and then the room went black. And then I have read enough. I read those 26 volumes of the Warren Commission over and over, and every time they go off the record or change the subject, this is noted. And when he said too much, when the judge was too lenient, that ended the whole tone of the case, and he couldn't admit any more before the jury. Now we'll get back to the tooth incident and then back to the book Search for Justice. After his tooth was pulled in pieces, splintered with a pliers, and he was, you know, bleeding in shock, then he walks down the hall, and the guards take him, assault him, beat him, take the cotton out of his bleeding mouth, and break another tooth on the way back to his cell. That's in Soledad. This can be done.
And the prison hasn't answered.
The prison watched him being beat up. I'll give you the date that they watched.
Has the prison... Has this has been brought up in court.
This is brought up in court. And
what has been the prison's reaction? Has anyone from the courts asked whether this has been done?
Should I tell you what happened in the court as he's telling about being the second tooth broken as he's bleeding?
Well, somebody must have said that this isn't true, that Pindell is lying.
No, this has not been challenged. He's not lying, and he wants his dental records, and his defense attorney won't even bring them in to prove that he's right. And while he's telling about being beaten up, he's talking, and he's looking around at the jury, and he's saying, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let the record show that the sixth man in the jury is asleep. While he's telling about pulling his tooth with a plier, because they say, let the dog suffer, let the pig suffer, you know, and they call him baboon and nigger and let him have it, and pull it without anesthetic, he points to juror number 6 who's asleep at that particular moment in his testimony. No, this is what was happening. That's just a fraction. This is a fraction of what happened. Search for Justice says the lawyer's theory is simply that he could go back for an appeal. And the judge has said 3, 10 times in 2 days, well, you can have an appeal. He sat there yesterday with the jury out of the room, and the judge made him give a lot more evidence of things he had, and then he kept throwing them out one by one. The jury couldn't see him. Well, let the record show you didn't have appeal. Pindell doesn't need an appeal. He could be proved innocent now. He'll be dead before the next appeal comes. So the judge is throwing this along and not letting the jury see any information that would prove his innocence. So he'll obviously have a new trial, but then he won't be alive. And I compared this in that book about Nazi Germany, how they extended, killed 400 different types of political assassinations, and those were people that were catching on to the system of fascism, and they terrorize other people by lengthening the court system and letting them see what happens to them. This was a technique used in Nazi Germany, and this is what they would use on Pinel. He has to have another trial, but he should. They'll close it this week. They're rushing through it today and tomorrow, Thursday and Friday. It'll probably be over by Saturday. I'm on record on this tape. It'll go to New York, wherever my voice can be heard or in the printed word. This was no trial. I know the other trials weren't either. Of Manson, Sirhan, Frazier, James Ray. And this one is easy because it's a two-week proof that there was no trial and evidence of innocence. The Search for Justice says the inquisitorial system assumes that the judge will be a seeker of truth and will not develop a policeman complex or see his role as a paid public official who needs to curb or control crime. I'll repeat that, and I'll tell you about the judge out there yesterday. The inquisitorial system assumes the judge will be a seeker of truth and will not develop a policeman complex or seek his role as a paid public official who has to curb or control crime. End quotes. I saw Judge Machado yesterday. I saw Hugo Pinel read a list of 30 people, eyewitnesses on the tier, who said he did not kill McCarthy, a guard at Fort Ord. He's accused of killing a guard at Fort Ord. The medical reports of how McCarthy died have been taken from Fort Ord Hospital. He was a guard, not at Fort Ord, at Soledad.
Yeah.
He died at Fort Ord. He was a guard at Soledad. And I'm going to read the testimony where Pinel was told, if you write a letter saying that George Jackson was involved in a murder in the prison system, you will be out on parole. And if you don't, we'll break you and we'll pin a rap on you and we'll keep you in for life. And they even said that they could kill a guard or anybody and pin it on him. This came out in the testimony. Now, a guard died by the name of McCarthy, and at the time that he was stabbed, he was taken to a hospital in Salinas, and he requested to go to Fort Ord, and he was conscious, and he was taken to Fort Ord. And he was in the emergency room there, and he passed away. And the medical records of how he died are not available. They're gone from Fort Ord. They're completely missing from this whole case. And this is identical to my other, like the car of John Kennedy being destroyed. The prosecution, the defense, nobody has a record of what happened to McCarthy, the nature of his wounds, or how he died at Fort Ord. But there are men, and I'm going to list them, that Pinel asked to be called as material witnesses to prove his innocence. And his defense attorney, appointed by the district attorney's office in Salinas, would not call these people. His defense attorney will not call these people. I went up during the interview.
Why won't he call them?
I went up to him. This is why he called KLRB or had his wife call, or another defense attorney's wife, third person, and I asked him about that yesterday. That's kind of a really chicken kind of thing to do. I went to him in the foyer, and I said, Mr. Tucker, why won't you call the people that Pinel wants? He said, because I won't. I said, but you could prove his innocence. He said, well, wait till you hear my summation. And he said, I will give you a summation. Because on the stand, Hugo Pinel accused his defense attorney, public defender appointed by the district attorney's office, of being part of a conspiracy against him. So I said, why won't you call these people in? He said, well, wait till you hear my summary tomorrow or the next day. And I said, summary? This case has only started. I mean, you've got a list of witnesses here. He wouldn't call them. He was going to give a summary. I said, then you have to be part of this conspiracy that he's talking about accusing you of on the stand, because you won't call the people in that would prove his innocence. He said, well, then say what you want. That's the way I do it. He says, I've been to law school, and this is the way I do it. And I said, well, I just can't believe it. I really can't believe it. So yesterday, a witness came in court by the name of Raymond Marcus, and I have a list here of the people that have been put in the hole who wanted to testify or would.
On the behalf of Bunnell. So Raymond Marcus was brought into court yesterday.
He had heavy chains around his ankles. His arms were so tight, you know, that there was no circulation hardly in his wrists. He had chains around his shoulders, and then he had them around his neck. and they were very tight around his neck. They were choking him. And he was the man who could speak up. Pinnell couldn't have the other 30 people he wanted, but Raymond Marcus was brought in. And Raymond Marcus began to talk about how, suggesting that Pinnell was innocent. He said, "Pardon me, Your Honor, I can't talk with these chains on my neck." And the judge says, "Do you want to continue or get out as a witness?" And he says, "Well, could you..." There were four armed guards in back of him. There were four on the side. The room had eight in the back of the room. The FBI men sit there every third seat, and they line up the back of the row. The halls are filled with armed people. This man is handcuffed at a table, chains on his body to a chair. His legs are chained, and he can't talk. But he, if you remove the throat chain, he'd give his testimony. And the judge said, "Either speak now, speak up now, or you will not be used as a witness." And he said, "Pardon me, couldn't you just remove my throat? He is not used to court proceedings." He said, "I'm choking. I can't talk. The air isn't coming." The judge says, "Remove Marcus from the room. He can't be used as a witness in defense of Pinnell." Well, that's with that, Marcus took his arms and snapped his handcuffs open. He was thoroughly chained in every way, and that's when the guards jumped on and pulled his hair out, and that's when the 40 officers came in. They wanted to bring the National Guards. The police came. That's when the men were pinned down to the floor in their chairs, the chains rattling. They were screaming. We didn't know how they were brutalized, and the whole law enforcement team was jumping on them. There were, you know, like 40 people on the other side of the bar in court, and 40 men, at least, on these two men who were moaning and groaning.
Okay, we'll continue with more of Dialogue Assassination after we identify the station. This is KLRB Carmel, Stereo 101.7, serving you 24 hours a day.